Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today in studio, I have David Donaldson, who's the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center, and Michael Daly, who's the Chief Operating Officer for the Atlanta Healing Center. They also are going to play another role today, and that's their role of being experts in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to really go more into detail about the steps, where they come from, how they work, and what happens when you actually work the steps. A little bit of background, though. Alcoholics Anonymous was actually formed in Akron, Ohio, on June 10, 1935. This was the last day, the last drink that Dr. Bob Smith took. He was a surgeon, and he used to have a drink, at least a beer, before each surgery in order to steady his hands and keep them from shaking. He had met Bill Wilson, who was in early recovery himself from alcoholism, through a mutual friend. At this point, Bill Wilson had been through at least four detoxes that we know of, had been told by his doctor that he may be a hopeless case, and had had what he describes as a spiritual experience that resulted in his becoming involved with the Oxford Group, which was a religious organization not founded originally to help with alcoholics, the way the Washingtonian Group or the Keeley League had been founded about 100 years before. The Washingtonian Group was formed in Baltimore in 1840, and it was one of the first of a number of temperance movements that were directed towards the really incredible rate of alcohol consumption in the United States during that period of time. The Oxford Group had taken over working with folks who had the disease of addiction, and Bill Wilson had gotten involved with them looking for a spiritual answer, not a religious answer. That's a very important distinction, but a spiritual answer to his problem with alcohol. He realized as he was traveling for business that it was very hard for him to stay sober just by himself, and he reached out to a local church. They got him in touch with a member of the church, and she knew Dr. Bob Smith. She was very interested in having Bill Wilson talk to Bob Smith about his own struggles with alcohol and his recovery, and the two of them decided through their mutual support of each other that that was really the way that one alcoholic helping another, this was the way in which the disease of alcoholism could actually provide an opportunity to help each other and to provide an opportunity for people to stay in recovery. There are a number of tenets that are held by the organization, and that's that they don't get involved in any kind of political movements. This is where the Oxford Group had gotten into some trouble. They were taking sides in prohibition, and it caused a splinter between the various factions, members of the Oxford Group, and They decided becoming politically involved was not their role. Their role and their interest was in helping the person who had alcoholism. They weren't interested in political causes, religious organizations. They weren't interested in anything other than one alcoholic helping another. There are no dues to be paid. There are no membership requirements except
the desire to stop drinking.
Thank you, Michael. That is the only requirement for membership. Now, some of the earlier groups required an abstinence pledge. And if you signed the abstinence pledge and then were found to not be abstinent, you were kicked out, you were shamed, you were not allowed to come back. AA is not like that at all. No. You can keep coming back as often as you need. It's the ultimate harm reduction model of addiction work. It's not meant to be treatment. It's not meant to be education. It's meant to be one alcoholic helping another. So I thought it would be important today to actually go through the steps. We've had some requests from our listeners for more information about the steps themselves. We have, over the years, made reference to the 12 steps, talked about going to meetings, but we haven't actually gone through the steps one by one and talk about what it means and how it might be applied in someone's life. So let's go ahead and start with step one.
All right, very good. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable.
So in stopping and really looking at the steps, that phrase, the steps, is thrown out there. You got to work the steps. When are you going to start doing the steps? And it becomes a mystery in and of itself. And what I like about these kind of conversations is and this topic today in particular is just that it makes it it's discussed all the time as this is a simple program for complicated people. And the reality is these are 12 very simple steps that you take one at a time, with the first one being that we just admit that we cannot control what happens when we drink. We cannot control what's happening with alcohol in our system. We have no way of predicting what's going to happen once we have a first drink. And that everything we've done to try and control it is making our lives worse and worse and worse, that life is just becoming unmanageable. And what I think is so important with step one is both half of those of that equation. So there are lots and lots of people who absolutely know that when they take a drink, they have no idea when they're going to quit. But for them, the denial is they're only hurting themselves. It's not impacting anybody else. My life's not unmanageable. I don't know why you keep saying that. There's a lot of other people who know their life is a mess. They love living in chaos, and they can talk about all of the horrible, miserable things that are going on in their life, but they're not able to go back and connect it to their drinking or their drug use. And so both of those groups keep missing the simplicity of step one.
Which really is, I think, about self-diagnosis. That your wife, your boss, the policeman, the judge,
school,
your parents, people are saying you have a problem. And until that person is able, as you said, David, to put together the idea that my life is unmanageable, out of control, and it's directly related to my use of alcohol. It's mm-hmm. not the bad people in my life who don't understand me. Many of our folks, when they first come in to treatment, are there not of their own great
volition.
Yes, they're not necessarily saying, "Gee, I need help." They don't really recognize that the source of the problem is the alcohol.
And they don't realize that it's the first drink. It's
right.
The first drink that starts you on this road. It's not the 10th drink. You know, I used to look at myself and I think, oh my gosh, if I only hadn't had those last however many. But
12.
the truth was, if I only hadn't taken that first drink. Because once I took that first drink, I never knew how many I was going to have. It was never going to be just that one, though. I knew that.
Although many people do tell themselves the story.
Oh, yeah. You tell the story over and over and over and over again. But the minute you have just one as an alcoholic, you lose control. You just cannot.
And so part of what people do is try to find ways to manage control the first part of this.
Mm-hmm.
They'll only drink beer. They'll only drink on weekends. They'll only drink on special events. They'll only drink at home. They'll only drink when they are safely behind locked doors and they know they're not going to get their keys and drive, because they get the impression that it's not the drinking that's the problem, it's the
driving
that's the problem, or it's the police that keep giving DUIs, or the people that get in the way when I try to back out of the driveway, not the fact that when I'm drinking, everything else happens.
Right.
So that's a real important step, and I know that people often see these steps as something to be checked off. Well, I've done step one, I'll do step two, I'll do step three, but is that really advisable? Should you go on to the second or the third or the fourth step if you don't really get the first step?
I think that the getting is going to be an ongoing process,
right,
and they're going to get it more and more and more as they continue to work on through the steps. I think that people need to begin to get a grasp of what the other steps are about and what's going on. But there is a certain amount of, you have to get enough of it to be able to move forward. If you're really just stuck on this is everybody else's problem but mine, then you're really not there yet. And a lot of people, when you talk about self-diagnosis, they'll think, well, I can't say that someone else is an alcoholic. And it's true that people aren't going to recover until they're able to admit it.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that when you're looking at a drunk, you don't know that you're looking at a drunk.
Right.
And the reality to be able to just say, you know, your drinking is just like that of an alcoholic is helpful in them coming through that denial process.
So education is an important part of early recovery. What is alcoholism? What is the disease of addiction? What are similar characteristics? How might you make that diagnosis? If you were a professional looking at someone, how would you make that diagnosis? If you were a layperson looking at someone? So the education around what it is and what it isn't is really important. And this first step is the foundation for people recognizing that they need help.
Right. And one thing that's, I think, important here is that as a person comes to grips with their powerlessness over alcohol and the unmanageability,
mm-hmm.
The thing is that if there's a little bit of recognition there, okay, because as for my experience, I started out with a little bit of recognition. I knew that my life was unmanageable. I knew that I had become powerless over alcohol, okay? But what was so interesting to me was that as I did step one, as I did step two, as I did step three, got into step four, and then my fifth step, it became absolutely crystal clear that my life was a lot more unmanageable and that I was much more powerless.
Mm-hmm.
But I was willing to believe that what I had seen early on was enough to make me go on to step two.
So when you say work step one, what do you mean? You read that out loud over and over again until you believe it? What's the process of working a step?
Working the steps is the whole tradition of the steps is your sponsor is teaching you what was done for them. So working a steps is really going to vary from person to person. But pretty much working step one is stopping and looking at your own history with alcohol or with drugs and looking at how it's progressed and how it's become unmanageable, and also looking at your own life history and looking at how it's gotten progressively worse and worse.
We'll take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the 12 steps, where they came from, and how they can help. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Listen to America's Voice for Energy. I'm Marita Noon, and each week I'll guide our discussion on a fresh, news-based energy topic, only on America's Web Radio.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank. Today I have David Donaldson and Michael Daly from the Atlanta Healing Center. We're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, what they are, where they came from, and how they can help. The important thing to understand is that other models of self-help in the recovery world use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as their starting point. Mm-hmm. So you might be in Narcotics Anonymous and you might substitute addiction or drugs for the word alcohol. Other 12-step help self-help groups might substitute food or gambling.
So emotions.
So it's real important that while we're speaking today directly about alcoholism and how the 12 steps as they were originally written apply to alcoholism, I think for any of our listeners it would be important to know that you can substitute anything in here from chocolate to shopping and it still is the same basic principles of recovery.
Yes.
So we talked about step one and about looking at how alcohol has affected your life, identifying the powerlessness and...
So we were just talking about how you work the steps.
Yes.
And I was talking about how it's really what your sponsor is going to do for you, what was done for them.
Right.
So I've known people whose sponsors will have them take the book that's called The 12 and 12,
right,
which is essays about each of the 12 steps and about each of the 12 traditions, and have them read step one each day for 30 days. I've known sponsors that will have somebody take the big book and just go through with a highlighter and highlight anything that they relate to. I've known them where they'll sit down and have them write a list of all the ways they're powerless and another list of the ways their life is unmanageable and process that with them. So it really varies. It's different from person to person to person.
But and it's really important that to say here that a sponsor can only give what a sponsor has gotten.
Right. So let's go back and say what's a sponsor, because I think that's another term that we use commonly. What is a sponsor?
So a sponsor is someone who's been in recovery longer than you have, and they're there to help you connect with mm-hmm. the program and work through the steps. I like to talk to people about what a sponsor's not. Mainly, a sponsor's not a therapist.
Right.
So they're not there to do family counseling or marital counseling. They're not your minister or your preacher, so they're not there to help you find Jesus.
They're not your banker.
They're not your banker. They're not your attorney. They're there to help you understand and work through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
And when you say, Michael, that they can only give what they've already gotten, it means that their work with an individual will be based on how they have been successful in their quest to remain sober and to be in recovery and work the steps.
Correct. A person gives their experience, which is their experience.
Right.
Their strength and their hope, okay? So their experience would be how they work the steps, how their sponsor had them work the steps. And it goes back, you know, it goes back through the various generations before.
Mm-hmm.
And they're each one is handed down. Each one, you know, their experience may be a little bit different than their sponsor's. So my experience is a little bit different than my sponsor's was. However, it's similar. And then when I pass my experience on to the next person, his experience, and I say his because in AA that's one of the things that is suggested is males get a male sponsor and females have a female sponsor. And so my experience is this. I pass that along to you. You will, you know, do things that I did and you'll hopefully get the same results that I have gotten.
There are people who want a different experience of the 12 steps than what they're getting from their sponsor. Perhaps they want to go much deeper or they don't want to go as deep as a sponsor may want to take them. And part of what you emphasize to somebody is it's really okay that there's everybody out there has a different experience and find the sponsor that you're going to connect with and work well with and get what they have. A woman that we talked to quite a bit had a great sponsor who was helpful for her for the first 3 years, and then she, at the three-year point, she wanted to go deeper into the steps, and so she found a woman who was able to take her to a deeper level with the steps, and her understanding just grew that way. So it's really becomes your own personal journey. You can get just a peripheral, this is going to help me stay sober, or you can use these steps to get real deep into the various issues in your life and truly transform your life.
Right.
And so a question that is commonly asked is, well, do I do this just once? Do I work the steps once and done?
The answer is probably not.
So this is a process.
It's a process. It's an ongoing process. Many times when you've, you know, like when I said earlier, that as you work step one, two, and three, and then move on to four, a lot more is revealed. There's all these sayings in Alcoholics Anonymous like this, you know,
More shall be revealed,
this too shall pass, and these certain sayings. And as you're working the steps, and you're going back and revisiting things, you're going, oh my gosh, that's what that means. That's why they're talking about that. Because as I'm delving into step four, I've jumped ahead here, but as I'm delving into step four, I understand now why one was so much more important. Or I see examples that I didn't really think of when I was writing out the list of examples for one. All of a sudden in four, as I have more time, things become more clear. I have more clarity, and I can see things clearer. So
step two and three are the steps that if somebody's going to throw a barrier into working the 12 steps, this is where they usually will throw it. A lot of times the barrier is step one, or it's the idea of going to meetings or the idea of opening up and getting to know other people. But what barrier they tend to throw out is, oh, it's just another religious program or another God program. So step two says, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And step three says, we
made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him.
And both of those are really emphasizing that it's your own journey, that you're making a decision to turn and trust God as you understand Him, higher power as you understand Him. And so it can be people who are coming back to their childhood religious beliefs, or it could be that they're discovering a whole new belief system. But it's really about, in step two, getting a place of hope that, you know, I don't have to die drunk. I can get the support from these people, and with their help, I can learn that I can get my life back together and become a normal, functioning, happy human being again.
Right.
So there is something out there that can help me. I don't have to stay in this place that I'm in. There's something out there that can help me, and this higher power, this greater power, can help bring me back to sanity.
Correct. And this was where my sponsor had me look up the definition of insanity and really understand what it meant to be basically insane. And insanity is, you know, doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results. But you're doing the same exact thing, and you're getting the same exact result. You're just trying to tell yourself that this time it's going to be different. And he just, you know, worked with me and made me understand that was a little bit insane, you know. And as I understood that, then I was able to say, okay, so there is something here that will bring sanity into my life, and I'm willing to have that.
So in AA, they'll use different acronyms for the word God. Some people will say group of drunks. I've come to this group of drunks, and they've helped me get sanity back in my life. Some people will say good orderly direction. By doing that with the support of this group, I can get sanity back in my life. And the true gist of it is that whatever your understanding of your higher power is going to work, provided you're getting out of yourself and getting the help and the support.
I had one individual that I've worked with who talked about reason and logic being his higher power.
Mm-hmm.
That when he was actively using and drinking, his ability to think through a problem logically, his ability to use reason and sense and good judgment went out the window. So his goal was to restore his brain and his life back to reason and logic. Uh-huh. He was a scientist, and he believed in those kinds of concepts, and reason and logic became his
higher power.
Higher power. That's how he could live his life in an orderly, successful, productive way, and that reaching out to strive to find reason and logic. So it can be a variety of things.
And that's one thing that when I got to the program and when I started working the steps, this whole God thing and the good orderly direction, that was really appealing to me. But what was so appealing and almost off-putting was that this higher power could be anything. And nobody could tell you that that was wrong or that was not the right mm-hmm. thinking. And that sort of disarmed everything. So, I mean, when it can be whatever it needs to be for you,
mm-hmm.
there's not a lot of excuses that you can use against it.
Right. And, you know, my study of the 12 steps and my study of world religions, there isn't a single religion that is not in compliance or parallel to the 12 steps. There's at least not to my knowledge,
right.
any kind of structured, organized religion, because that's also a concern for some people who have great faith and belong to an organized religion. They're afraid that this is somehow going to
undermine.
Lead them astray or undermine their faith and their commitment to their
deity
or their religion. So it can also go the other way, and people can be afraid to go to a 12-step meeting who have come from a more structured, organized religious background and think this is not okay, and this is not in keeping with what I hear on Sunday or Friday or Saturday, whatever mm-hmm. day they may worship. So it's important to understand that this isn't a conflict, and to take those conflicts and those barriers away and help people to see this for what it is.
Exactly.
I've known people who came from faiths where you didn't pray with people outside of your faith.
Mm-hmm.
And for those people, the meetings usually start with a prayer and end with a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those people who had that real strong sense of you don't pray with people outside of your faith, they would just have a moment of silence. And some would even step out of the room during that period and come back in afterwards for coffee and cookies or whatever. And there was no issue. It was totally fine.
Well, as you said in the beginning, it's a simple program for complicated people.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about step 3 and how the 12 steps can help people change their lives. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and today we're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, where they came from, and how they work. We've talked about steps 1, 2, and 3, which I think are a real strong foundation for the working the rest of the steps. Most people, when they come into treatment, the focus is on completing these first three steps, and that's commonly what happens in treatment centers and outpatient treatment programs, this emphasis on working these steps. The next four steps, well, actually the next six steps, but the next four steps in particular, I think, are places where the rubber meets the road.
Mm-hmm.
These are the action steps. These are the changing steps. This is where the real process of recovery, the miracle of recovery, I think, happens. For many years, when I was studying to be a psychiatrist and when I was doing my own psychiatric training, we were encouraged to be in analysis. And yes, through psychoanalysis, I learned very clearly why I'm crazy. I learned all of the reasons for the ways in which I had my worldview. I understood the origin of many of my problems. And after all those years and thousands of dollars, I realized I had great understanding, but I had no idea how to make it different. Because just having insight, just doing steps 1, 2, and 3, it gives
doesn't
you a foundation, but it doesn't solve the problem.
So yeah, there's a sign up at one of the groups that says, insight without behavioral change is meaningless.
Yes. And that's where I think many people stop after they've been in a treatment program. They stop after the first three steps, and they don't move forward, and they don't always see the changes. And Dr. Bob and Bill W., they were brilliant in the way they put these steps together with the first 100 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had great observational skills, in my opinion. They understood this disease, they understood what it did to people, and they understood, though they may not have known the science or the biology or the neurophysiology behind recovery, mm-hmm. they knew behaviorally what helped. And going through all the steps and working all the steps and making the changes in your life that the steps show you, that's where recovery happens.
Exactly.
So let's talk about steps 4 and 5.
So step 4 made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That's a whole lot.
That's a whole lot.
It looks really short. It doesn't have the word God in it.
It doesn't have alcohol in it.
It was one that intrigued me until I got into it. And it was always told to me that if you didn't do the fourth step, you would drink a fifth step. Or
you'd
if you
drink
didn't
a fifth.
Drink a fifth, yeah. So
if you don't do the fourth, you'll drink a fifth.
I was all raring to go get into this action. And then once I got going on it and really learned about it and saw what was required, it was daunting. But it was very eye-opening.
So a lot of people will look at that and get that kind of paralyzed fear place. And generally what that means is they need a little encouragement to keep moving forward. But it might mean that they really need to go back and spend some more time with the previous step. I tend to find if you're not able to move forward, then you probably haven't finished the work before.
Right.
In the basic text of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a guide for doing the fourth step, which basically looks at resentments, fears, and sexual behaviors, and has for each of those a format where you create four columns, which I find to be absolutely brilliant in helping people deal with anger and helping people deal with their fears and actually dealing with all emotions. The first column is, who are you mad at or what are you afraid of, and just putting the name there. The second column is why, and so you do your little essay about, I'm mad at my dad because he did blah, 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 and getting it all out there. The third column is what did it impact, and so you put down, well, it impacted my financial security, it impacted my self-esteem, it impacted my my ability to do what I wanted to. And then the fourth column, which a lot of people don't really like to see because it's kind of woven into the text a little bit, is what was my part in the whole situation.
Yes.
And when you get to that part, it gives you a little bit of insight and realizing that it might be that you're just hanging on to the resentment because, you know, 30 years of hanging on to resentment can be fun. Or it might be that you really did get hurt and you really did have some anger, and you never were able to find the voice to take care of yourself back then. But you, by doing that work, you get those insights.
And the understanding that, yes, my dad may have done thus and such, and you know what? Sometimes I provoked him.
Yeah, exactly.
sometimes, you know, through my own behavior. So that last column, what was my part, I think is the beginning of empathy, the beginning of understanding the impact that my behavior had on the people around me, and gave me the ability to have some empathy for those people that I may have hurt. Yes, they may have hurt me, they may have wronged me.
And in the process, it also, as you're going through it and as you're doing it and you're going through life and, and you know, living in that, you start to see, oh my gosh, I'm doing it again. I mean, you know, it becomes very glaring and obvious that a lot of our problems are through our own making,
and through patterns that we keep repeating until we really take the time to look and see it for what it is and identify those patterns of continued. I get in these same relationships that people look different, they sound different, but how I end up feeling in the relationship and how I end up behaving is the same over and over again.
Back to that one word.
And so when you put it on paper, when you put your pen to paper and you write it down, you look at it, the pattern is visually clear. You know, you can see absolutely every bit of it. And step five is that we admitted to ourselves, to God, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. So basically, we sit down with our sponsor or with some other human being, and we go through and we share what we just put on paper with our four step. And many people will talk about this being the first time in their adult years that they have felt clean, that they've felt honest, that they've felt accepted. That they had felt emotions at all. So this experience of doing a fifth step in and of itself is often an incredibly healing experience.
And spiritually enlightening.
Absolutely.
And it is very powerful in its ability to help people move beyond and to begin to see how they need to make changes. So the fourth and fifth step, excuse me, the fourth and fifth step are really very, very important because they are the first action steps.
Right.
And this whole living an honest life and being honest about what you do and how you feel and what you need, all of those things are really helpful, and they grow out of doing the fourth and fifth step.
Exactly. And for me, just for my personal experience, it was a very... it was like the weight of the world had been lifted off my shoulders. It was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's fresh air, there's fresh, it was just, had given me this new interest and new ability to move forward and not worry about all this other stuff. It was truly You know,
you really get to the place where you stop having to look back.
You do.
Looking over your shoulder. And there's options in the world that you get to see because you're not making sure that you know where your alcohol is at, and you're not making sure that you know where all of the bodies are buried, and you're able to just move forward with life.
And keep straight all the stories you've told.
Exactly.
And all of the people you've manipulated. It's moving forward from a free and honest place. Mm-hmm. That now you've said it all.
That
all out there.
It doesn't mean that anything changes. I mean, your knowledge of that is freeing. Your ability to hopefully catch things is there. You see patterns. You've been, you know, you've seen them. Somebody pointed them out to you. You actually feel them and everything. But it's nothing has changed yet.
And then we get to step 6 and 7. Personally, for me, working a program of Al-Anon, step 6 and 7 were the really tough ones. Once I saw the patterns, once I saw my role, 6 and 7 got to me.
Yes. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. There's a lot of words in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then step 7, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. So they really are going hand in hand. And you can hear as we're talking about this how each of the steps builds on each other. Because if you've actually done that written four step and you've written out that fourth column and you've seen repeatedly these patterns, the term gets changed throughout the steps, shortcomings, defects of character, but it's really these patterns that you just keep doing that hinder your life, that hinder your relationships, that hinder your ability to function as an adult.
Well, you see your fears, your anger, your resentments, your fears, your anger, your resentments, your resentments, your resentments.
One of the quotes that is in the big book is taken from Shakespeare, where he talks about all the world as a stage, and we are but actors upon it. And in his emphasis, we are the main character. We're center stage, and everybody in our life, all those people from all the columns on step 4, were revolving around us, and our resentments and our character defects were all about how these people weren't, you know,
doing
what we wanted, weren't abiding by our control, they weren't giving us what we wanted, they weren't paying our bills, and they were making us be open up and honest about things. And so it's really about helping ourselves step down from being center stage and being a part of the rest of the cast.
And I think there's some interesting psychological things that happen when you're doing the steps, particularly around 6 and 7, because this is saying, okay, I'm not telling myself any stories anymore. I really realize that this is what happens. This is how I interact with people, and I need to make that change. I need to do this differently. I need to stop doing that, and I need to make this change very soon. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for listening.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Listen to America's Voice for Energy. I'm Marita Noon, and each week I'll guide our discussion on a fresh, news-based energy topic, only on America's Web Radio.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Yes.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank. I have David Donaldson and Michael Daly with me today, and we're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Before the break, we were talking about the
six and seven steps.
Six and seven. Thank you. And they still discombobulate me because this is really saying I'm going to stop doing that. I recognize my actions, my behaviors, my patterns, and I'm going to stop doing that. I am going to make these changes so that my life will be better, I can be happier, I can live free of resentments and anger, and I can move forward. And sometimes we don't always want to do that. And it can be quite a challenge. So mm-hmm. I think six and seven are very interesting internal goals that you're setting about how you're going to really stop doing that stupid stuff.
And they have that word in them, the God word in them, which just completely throws people for a loop.
Right.
Because you're asking this higher power mm-hmm. that you've defined and that you've mm-hmm. hopefully become comfortable with, but you're not 100% comfortable with them. And you've decided to be entirely ready for that higher power to take this away.
Yep.
So a lot of people will cling to the, this is my work, I have to do this. And they'll really get stuck on the I once again.
Uh-huh.
At a place where it really is about trusting the process and trusting whatever their understanding of their higher power to do mm-hmm. what needs to be done. It's also, this beginning to look at changing your shortcomings or changing your character defects can be a really subtle process. You might have it really clear that every time I get in this relationship, I get into this place where I'm being codependent and I'm running all the show, and you might see that really clearly, but you might not see the subtler gains that you're getting from it that you're not quite really ready to let go of. It might be nice that you have somebody that's always looking to you and feeling like they really need you to be there, and mm-hmm. that sense of I need to be needed might be hard to recognize and might be even harder to let go of.
Right. And that desire to control other people and to fix everything and manipulate
and not feel the feeling of fear.
And not be afraid. And all of those things get tied up in, I think, step six and seven. So when we move on to eight and nine, these also cause some difficulties for some folks.
More fear. Step eight is we made a list of all persons we had harmed, and we became willing to make amends to them all. So the action now is moving from just our internal work back into the community. We're going back there to fix the damages we've done. And then step nine is we made direct amends to such persons whenever possible, except, here's our caveat, except when to do so would injure them or others. Many, many people will cling on to that whole except part. And I actually have heard people say, except if it's going to cause harm, and they won't finish it to others. So recognizing that it's a time to be courageous and go out and say, I'm sorry about whatever it was I did. I screwed up. Mm-hmm. How can I fix this?
Mm-hmm.
But part of what, for me, what's so important about these two steps is within the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's these promises that are hanging on all the walls in all the meetings, and they read it at the beginning of all the meetings. And what they don't tell you when they're reading it is that these promises come true in everybody's lives when
they do.
Step 8 and 9. Right in the middle of step 9, it says, if we are fearless about this phase of our recovery process, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. And then the promises, beginning to be confident with people, not having to hide, all tends to just come forth.
And it's interesting because for my experience and some of the people that I know's experience, when they're starting that ninth step, after they've made this list and they've set a plan of action and they know how to handle things, okay, on this list, and then all of a sudden something presents itself that's completely out of the blue, and then how do you handle it? And intuitively, hopefully, you'll know how to handle it. But it's very interesting when that occurs. It's almost like, okay, I'm not running the show, and here's my opportunity, and here's what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. It's also very interesting when you get to the point where you think that certain things are going a certain way, and you've had your experience of, you know, the first 10 or 12 people on the list or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and that's all gone very good. And then you come to the next one, and boom. It doesn't go so good, and it's like it shakes you to the core.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's what's really very good, because getting shook up a little bit is very important.
It allows you to feel the reality of who you are in the world, and the reality that some people have been
more hurt
and right. aren't willing to forgive just because you've done this work, and that you have no power to change them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I sense that we ought to just go ahead and read these promises so people know what we're talking about.
I think so.
We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We
think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And for me, when I'm looking at these steps, the true healing that happens is when the things that used to scare us and baffle us become the part of our story that helps somebody new get clean and sober.
Mm-hmm.
And I've so often experienced it when somebody is able to just open up and share something that they used to find mortifying about themselves, and that in and of itself transforms both their lives.
So the person who hears it and says, I'm not alone, I'm not the only one, and the person who has originally experienced that is able to share it and not hide and not be ashamed, but to say, this is where I was, and this is where I've come, and this is how I've done it.
And inevitably, in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, other people will laugh almost at everything and say, well, yeah, that happened to me too, or you know, and that's what brings this bond of people together, is that you learn how to laugh at these horrific things.
It's part
because of it's something that happened, you're not proud of it, and you've moved on, but it takes the power away from it.
Right.
And that's why this whole 12 steps and the meetings and the whole thing work so well, is because it's one person that's been where you have been and says, you know what, it's not always going to be horrible. Sooner or later, you're going to laugh at some of this stuff.
And as Dr. Talbot used to tell me all the time when I was in training for addiction, to become an addiction psychiatrist, he used to say, it's your secrets that will kill you. And when you put it all out there, and you don't hold back and you don't shy away and you hope that other people will find your example helpful, if not entertaining. It's a way to take the power away, and it's a way for you to heal and move away from those bad and dangerous places that you may have been. So we've got just a couple of minutes, and I think that steps 10, 11, and 12 are really, really very helpful.
They are. The 10th step is a step that I think is a really wonderful step, because we can stop and do that on a daily basis, on even on an hourly basis, or on a you know, predetermined set of time, where we look at what we have just done and we decide to make amends right then and there.
The 10th step says continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it.
Right.
So it's our built-in, you know what, oops, I messed up and I'm sorry, and I can go on with life. There's people who make a pattern of doing an inventory every night before they go to bed, and they just are able to go to sleep with a good conscience. They know the next day what they need to do to fix anything, and able to move on with their lives. The 11th and 12th steps are about carrying this on out into the community. 11th is, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, that word, as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And then, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to the alcoholic and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So it's that opportunity to
share
and heal and help somebody who's where you once were find out that there's hope and there's a way to change.
And the greatest thing about all of this is that when you practice 11 and 12, and especially 12, and you help somebody else, it's amazing how much help you gain yourself. Every time that I've reached out to be helpful to another person, the amount of help that I gain from that is just amazing.
It's astounding. And we've talked about that sometimes meetings will end with a prayer, and a common prayer is the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank
Keep
you.
Coming back.
It works if you work it. Thank you, David. Thank you, Michael. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.